This is Nick Geyer, the Palouse Pundit, talking about tolerance for Islam in the early American Republic. This Saturday, March 31st at 1:30, there will be a symposium on Islam, civilization, and faith in the Moscow High School auditorium. It is free and open to the public. Keith Ellison, America's first Muslim congressman, received permission from the Library of Congress to use Thomas Jefferson's copy of the Quran on which to take his personal oath of office. A Republican colleague from Virginia welcomed Ellison to the House with a threat to deport him, assuming that his constituents had mistakenly elected a terrorist who had illegally entered the country. The fact is that Ellison's family has been in this country since 1742. Jefferson's copy of the Quran, published in 1764, contains a commentary by George Sale, who, although generally negative, gave Jefferson and other readers a fairly accurate description of the Islamic religion. First, Sale rejected the idea that Islam was spread primarily by the sword. Indeed, he reminded Jews and Christians of their own violent histories. Second, Sale praised Muhammad for bringing pagan Arabs to the knowledge of the one true God, a remarkable contrast to most Christians today, who believe that Allah and Jehovah are completely separate deities. We need only think of Lieutenant General William Boykin, who told his Virginia congregation that his God was bigger than Allah. James Hudson, chief of the manuscript division of the Library of Congress, did a search of his documents and has offered the following instances of tolerance for Muslims in the early American Republic. On June 7, 1776, the Continental Congress passed a resolution declaring that true freedom embraces the Muslim and the Hindu as well as the Christian. In 1786, the Virginia legislature, by a large majority, voted against attempts to exclude Jews and Muslims from a bill protecting religious freedom. Hudson cites a petition from citizens of Chesterfield County, Virginia, who are concerned about not becoming our own enemies and weakening this infant state by excluding Jews and Muslims. This expression of tolerance is remarkable considering the fact that America's first foreign enemies were Muslim terrorists, the Barbary pirates of the Mediterranean. The earliest Muslim form of government was a federation of Muslims, Jews, and pagans that Muhammad brought together for common defense and peacemaking, much like the common defense and domestic tranquility that our own federal government is charged to provide. This Muslim constitution is called the Charter of Medina of AD 622. It provided for religious freedom and the right not to be found guilty because of the deeds of an ally, a decisive break from ancient laws that made the sins of others your own. In addition, the people of Medina were secure in their own homes, similar to our own Fourth Amendment protections. Early Muslim government was based on elections, broad deliberation, including women, and consensus, the protection of minorities, the appeal to the wisdom of experience and learning. While the emphasis on reasoned deliberation has not been completely lost, the rule of force dramatically came into play with the assassination of the third caliph in AD 656 and a switch to hereditary rule, which has been the norm in Muslim countries for centuries. So with regard to the question of whether Muslim countries can become democracies, the answer is definitely affirmative, as long as they recover the ideals of the Charter of Medina and the democratic principles embedded in the Quran. Indeed, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Bangladesh are well on their way in doing just that. This is Nick Geyer, the Palouse Pundit, requesting that you send your comments to nickgeyer@adelphia.net or check out my website at www.nickgeyer.com.